10 years ago today, former Republican Governor Scott Walker held a press conference to introduce the bill now known in Wisconsin as Act 10. The proposal sparked massive protests as unions warned the plan could redefine organized labor in the state. As Sean Johnson reports, they were right.
Just 2 days after Walker introduced Act 10, teachers were already gathering outside the Wisconsin State Capitol. It was a small group at first. Some gave speeches.
Listen up, guys! This way, please!
We could lose this fight!
Charles Patton, who was then a teacher from Wausau, warned that if the public viewed this fight as a dispute over teachers' pay, Walker would win.
We must help our neighbors. All of the citizens of Wisconsin see that union rights are every worker's rights.
Days later, the protest crowd numbered in the thousands. It included teacher Diana Calopi of Whitewater, who decided she had to come to Madison to try to stop Walker's bill.
Life will probably never go back to normal unless this gets killed.
Eventually, though, Republicans passed the bill, and Walker signed it. In the state that was the birthplace for public sector unions, Act 10 was now law. In a recent interview reflecting on the 10-year anniversary of the protests, Calopi says she's still teaching in Whitewater, where teachers continue to keep their union. But these days, not everyone pays their dues.
We clearly don't have 100% membership anymore, and a lot of it's financial. That's the number one reason people tell us they can't do it, because they can't afford to have anything else taken out of their paycheck.
Looking back, Charles Patton says Act 10 changed everything. He left Wausau and took a higher-paying teaching job in California.
It's partly financial, yes, but it's also cultural. And so there's some of that. The progressive Wisconsin of my youth, I think, is gone.
10 years after Act 10, organized labor forges on in Wisconsin. But being a union member today means something different. For most public sector unions to even exist, they have to get a majority of all members to vote every year to recertify. They can only bargain for small raises. Other benefits are off the table. Before Act 10, the percentage of all Wisconsin workers who belonged to a union was well above the national rate. University of Wisconsin-Madison labor economist Laura Dresser says a decade later, it's lower.
This policy really mattered to union density in this state.
Union membership dropped here from about 15% in 2010 to less than 9% last year. No other Midwest state saw a steeper decline. Wisconsin Democracy Campaign Director Matt Rothschild says union spending on lobbying in Wisconsin is also on the decline.
Unions in the Capitol in Madison are not throwing their weight around as much as they used to, for sure.
The last legislative session before Walker took office, the Wisconsin Education Association Council had a total of 17 lobbyists and spent almost $2.5 million trying to influence state government. Last year, the teachers union hired 2 lobbyists and spent just over $70,000. Still, Wisconsin AFL-CIO Director Stephanie Bloomingdale says the Act 10 protests lit a spark for unions that continues today. People saw unions fight for their members. She says it was meaningful.
That strength of conviction and that willingness to continue to persevere because of what we believe in is so important. That is a moment in our collective history that will never be forgotten.
Others aren't so sure. Patrick Wyckoff is the executive director of Ask Me Council 32 in Wisconsin, a public sector union that represents everyone from prison guards to custodians. He says people have a romantic view of the Act 10 protests, but Wisconsin's workforce has changed.
The majority of our potential members and members weren't employed here for Act 10. So this is history to them. It's like 9/11 to my kids. It was a once-in-a-lifetime thing that we went through, but my kids don't remember it.
Wyckoff says these days his union concentrates on working conditions, a lot like the union his dad and grandpa were in. But it's a far cry from the kind of union Wisconsin workers knew just 10 years ago. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And now we're talking freight activity and long-haul trucking. The Owner-Operator Independent Drivers Association testified before the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee last week. Its executive delivered this message. When many Americans began working from home, truckers continued to crisscross the country, picking up and delivering the things that we all need. The industry is concerned about new federal regulations, rising insurance premiums, and the future of the overtime exemption. Are you a truck driver? How has your work changed amid the pandemic? What questions do you have about the industry? 800-642-1234. Rob Reich is Executive Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer for Schneider National. That's a freight transportation and trucking company based in Green Bay. Rob, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me on.
Well, give us your read on the industry. How has the pandemic affected trucking and freight transportation as a whole?
Well, very similar to the economy as a whole, Kate, we all saw a dramatic drop in freight volumes in the second quarter when the pandemic shutdowns first occurred. So we saw a big uptick in March as everybody stocked up on toilet paper and everything they needed for their house, and then a dramatic drop with all of the shutdowns. Since then, though, we've seen some recovery and saw very positive momentum from a freight volume standpoint in the fourth quarter. The American Trucking Association does a freight tonnage report, and they showed that December was actually the first month with more freight volume year over year since March. So we're seeing a nice recovery and some positive momentum.
Yeah, freight volume, truck tonnage clearly outperforming our broader economy. Freight continued to move despite COVID. Are economic conditions for truckers as fragile or volatile as we may think?
Well, there's always volatility, I think, given the uncertain nature of the pandemic. But, positive news, obviously, with the vaccine rolling out. So I think given consumer decisions, we're seeing a lot of strong consumption. All of us continue to buy things for the house. We've seen a lot more single family home building, and that always generates a lot of freight for everything that you have to buy to put in a new house. So you put all that together, and again, a better economic situation that we seem to be approaching. I think, again, fairly positive perspective.
What are you experiencing at Schneider National? Are you hiring, or are you in, a plateau time, or what is it like?
Oh, we're absolutely hiring, Kate. We clearly see there's more freight than the industry can handle right now. And so we're hiring, and I think everyone else is as well, trying to find additional drivers to deal with the freight volume. So no plateau whatsoever. And it's hard to find drivers. As you talked about with OIDA's testimony in Washington, we all got to feel really proud of all of our Schneider drivers and all the drivers in the industry who have so successfully and safely handled the pandemic. And we need more of them. So absolutely, we're hiring.
Why is it hard to find drivers?
You know, I think you look at the blue collar side of the labor force, there are a lot of options for people right now, given where there is economic activity. So warehousing, now it's winter here, so we're seeing not as much construction, but in other parts of the country, construction still continues. So there's a lot of competition for the folks that would consider driving as a career.
Rob Reich is with us, Chief Administrative Officer for Schneider National. That's a trucking company based in Green Bay. As we take a look at the industry, let's bring in John now, joining us from Elkhorn. Hi, John. And I understand you are a truck driver.
Yeah. Good morning. Yeah, I'm actually sitting in my truck right now waiting for the warm-up procedure to finish. And I'm on Indeed, and I get calls probably 3 times a week from recruiters trying to get me to move to over the road. I do local right now, but yesterday I actually put in my notice where I work now because I'm going to go to work for a friend of mine that has a trucking company with 40 trucks, and because he is so swamped, he can't keep up. And I live alone and I have a dog, and the thing that was keeping me from doing long haul driving or multiple day was I would need to take my dog with, because can't leave it alone at home. And he said, yeah, no problem, that you can bring it along. And because of that, then I can now do over the road. But from what I can see in southern Wisconsin anyways, there's just a huge lack of drivers. I seriously get at least 3 to 4 recruiters a week that email me or call me looking if I would come work for them.
Jen, let me ask you this. With the tight demand and all the incentives out there, do you see your pay going up?
Well, I mean, it is now because I'm going from a local drive where I just do local hauls, only driving 150, 250 miles a day, to where I'll be driving 2,500 to 3,000 miles a week. And so my pay is going to basically double. But looking at all the jobs that I was offered, it looks like the average is between 22 and 25 an hour for drivers. And I've been driving for years. I used to drive a dump truck and haul corn, grain corn, and I used to make 17 an hour. So that was only a couple of years ago, and now we see the average is around 22 to 25.
John, thank you for bringing your story. Rob, what do you see out of John's situation there, getting calls from recruiters all the time?
That doesn't surprise me at all, Kate. In fact, I hope Schneider called John. We'd love to. That's really the nature of the competitive issues I talked about for drivers is we're all looking, and if their resume's out on Indeed, we've got a recruiter who's going to call them for sure. So that doesn't surprise me at all. And it's interesting. I think, you know, John's decision is a frequent one that we see is the trade-off between do I want to drive local and get home every night, or do I pursue the higher paying jobs that are going to require me to be over the road during the week and just get home on the weekends?
Yeah, and about 3/4 of your drivers are in the over the road category, I understand.
That's right, Kate. We're predominantly over the road organization. Now, we have a decent number of jobs that get home every day, like the one John talked about, but most of our drivers are going to be out over the road at least part of the week and then home on the weekends.
Trucking Logistics Executive Rob Reich explaining how the trucking industry has responded to the market fluctuations amid the economic fallout from COVID. Have you considered becoming a long-haul trucker? Are you a small operator or an independent trucking contractor? What are the advantages? What are the drawbacks of your work? And what do you see out there on the horizon for your industry? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Rob Reich here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Rob Reich on the trucking industry amid COVID. The Wall Street Journal reported this week that the number of trucking companies that went out of business in 2020 nearly tripled compared to 2019. About 3,100 fleets shut down and smaller trucking firms were particularly hard hit. Are you an over-the-road trucker? What has the pandemic been like for you? Is your tonnage trending up or downward? What will the spring and summer hold? 800-642-1234. Rob Reich of Schneider National is with us for about 10 more minutes. Rob, what do you make of that data, that more than 3,100 fleets shut down last year? What is happening to small truckers in this segment of the industry?
Yeah, I think what you see there, Kate, is when you're small, there's a little bit more risk because you tend to be aligned with just a couple of customers. And with the very quick drop off in freight volumes in the second quarter, I think that's what hit a lot of those smaller guys is if you were aligned with one of your bigger customers who, say, shut down for 2 months, that was a fairly significant financial hit. Whereas if you're a larger fleet, of course, you have a wide variety of customers. So I think that's probably one of the real driving factors to seeing the smaller fleets suffer like that.
Let's bring in Steve now in Lake Geneva. Hi, Steve. Oh, Steve is not there. Steve was looking for a second career after retiring, has always enjoyed driving. And Steve was wondering, do you see people doing encore careers in trucking?
We sure do, Kate. Actually, that's fairly common. People may be surprised that the average age of a driver that we hire out of a truck driving school, so somebody who's just coming into the industry, is 38. So we tend to see folks who this is their second and third career after they've done some other things. And we absolutely see people who are retiring who are coming into the industry. We hire a lot, for example, out of the military retirees coming to join us and other folks as well. So fairly common.
Let's bring in Cindy now in Appleton. Hi, Cindy.
Good morning. I'm just wondering how the autonomous vehicle is going to affect the industry and when do you see that on the horizon?
Cindy, thank you. Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
So there's definitely autonomous technology being worked in the industry. It's something we're taking a look at and involved with. I think it's going to be a while until that technology is really mature enough where we might see it on the highways. However, I think what you'll see is it's more of an on-highway, longer haul application. On either end, you're still going to have really good driving jobs that are working with the customer, picking up the freight, and delivering it to a point where perhaps an autonomous vehicle could pick it up and do some of the highway driving. So I think it could change what some of the jobs look like and actually create better time at home and better jobs from that sense of keeping the drivers closer to home.
Jacob is with us from Eau Claire in the trucking industry for 20 years. Jacob, hi.
Hi.
Go ahead. What is your story? What would you like to add?
Well, I run Reefer Dedicated for JBS for the last couple of years, and through COVID, it took a big hit as plants shut down. I ended up getting laid off for 3 months as freight pretty much came to a real big slowdown.
What is it like now for you?
It started picking back up, I'd say October last year. It started picking back up again, and it's been going pretty strong as there's been a big demand for food.
And are you over the road or local?
I run regional. I run mainly Midwest.
Yeah. And very quickly, Jacob, why are you a truck driver? What keeps you in the industry?
What keeps me in the industry is basically the money. I mean, it's out there, and money has gone up in the industry over the last few years.
Jacob, thank you for sharing your story. You know, Rob, it sounds like Jacob has that satisfaction, even though he was laid off for a period of months early on in COVID, that the, you know, making the money is there.
Absolutely. As Jacob talked about, the money's there and it's increasing. We've just rolled out some driver pay increases to our fleet that range from 5 to 20%. And so it is a job where you can make a good living at it.
Do you feel like the competitiveness to get drivers and to keep those drivers with you, does that, you know, bring up the costs and the salaries, the wages?
Absolutely. It's classic supply and demand for sure. And within trucking companies and again, with other industries that are looking for folks with some similar skill sets. So that absolutely drives pay, and we're seeing that in the industry.
Let's look at COVID specifically. How is COVID testing being handled by the trucking industry or looking inward at your company?
Yeah, we've got a good HR team that we put together, Kate, to work with all of our associates, drivers and non-drivers alike. So if there's any symptoms or anything like that, if you're a driver who's driving over the road, we make sure we get you routed home right away so you can get tested at home. And then we've got just a really good quarantine process if necessary, and a good support network for the drivers if we've got to get them home with symptoms and or a positive test or exposure to someone else. So I think it's all about a good process, and we're seeing that with the vaccinations rolling out. The states that are doing well just have a good process of managing that, and we had to do the same thing as people had symptoms.
We're talking with Rob Reich, Chief Administrative Officer for Schneider National. It's a freight transportation and trucking company in Green Bay. We're checking in on the trucking industry amid the pandemic. Let's go to Colette now in Lac des Flambeaux. Hi, Colette.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your story?
Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Well, I've been an over-the-road truck driver for 30 years. And when I got in the business 30 years ago, I was made aware that there was a trucking shortage for drivers. I see the same thing now. I haven't seen it get any better. But trucking companies will get you in the door. They'll tell you a story, and you're out for 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and that usually doesn't coincide with a good life at home. Now, being home on the weekend, as I've heard the man from Schneider talk about, People will be out 5.5 days. They come home for a day and a half. They can barely breathe, and they're back out there. Now, I've worked for a huge company where I was home 5 times in 1 year.
Wow.
Now I work for a company that I'm out 5 to 9 days. I don't get a lot of benefits, but the benefits I do get, I have quality time at home, and I have less waiting at the docks. I'm not compensated probably monetarily as much as I might be making with a huge trucking company.
And Colette, we are short on time, and thank you for sharing your story about how to negotiate that work-life balance. Rob, how do you try to do that when your truckers are only home on the weekends?
Yeah, it really is, Kate, making sure you get them home when you've committed to. It's what Colette was mentioning. It's really important that if you're going to set up a 5 days out, 2 days off, you have to live that out. And we think being able to live the expected plan is a really important part of lifestyle, as you get home when you intend to get home.
Very quickly, as we wrap up here, what are your efforts on diversity and inclusion as you broaden who is a truck driver in America?
Yeah, that's really important to us. We're very proud that we tend to reflect the communities in which we operate in our driver force, but we want to make sure that we're expanding our abilities there, particularly with women. So about 8% of our fleet today are female drivers, and we think we can do a lot more there. And so we're looking at how we spec the trucks, the nature of our operating centers, just to make sure we're extremely welcoming and have the right tools and processes available to support any driver, men or women.
Rob, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Rob Reich, Executive Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer for Schneider National, based in Green Bay. Just ahead, a decade of Act 10. We talk with educators, and former Governor Scott Walker is here. What is the lasting legacy of Act 10, which limited collective bargaining rights for most public employees? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.